This is a significant volume of shale oil that has the potential to exist.
New estimates for North Slope shale oil and gas prospects. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 24th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a winter case of PSP.
Now we can say that we've actually had paralytic shellfish poisoning cases every month of the year. So there's no safe time.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
New estimates show there could be a lot more oil and gas on the North Slope than previously identified. The U.S. Geological Survey today released the results of its recent assessment of shale oil and gas resources, focusing on North Slope conditions and data. David Hausneck with the USGS assessment team says data from existing oil fields and estimates from other unexplored parts of the slope find the conditions are right but unconfirmed for as much as 2 billion barrels of shale oil in the area. He says that is the second largest system in the USGS has found.
It's second to the Bakken shale in the Williston Basin. And it ranks just a little bit ahead of the Eagle Ford shale in South Texas. So this is a significant volume of shale oil that has the potential to exist, and certainly it's number two ranking among all the shale oil systems that we have assessed in recent years attests to that.
The report finds that conditions exist for up to 80 trillion cubic feet of shale gas on the North Slope, and that puts the Alaska system at number four among U.S. systems studied so far. Hausneck says the Marcellus system in the eastern U.S. is the largest, with about twice the potential of Alaska. The appropriate geological formations are centered within 50 miles of the coast, with the greatest estimates around Prudhoe Bay. They range from the eastern part of the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, to the Canning River on the western edge of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, according to Interior Department's Assistant Secretary of Water and Science, Ann Castle.
These shales span most of the North Slope, but our assessment has shown that they largely do not exist in the environmentally sensitive Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. It's also important to note that these estimated resources represent technically recoverable oil and gas resources. And that means that's the quantity of oil and gas producible using currently available technology and industry practices, regardless of economic or accessibility considerations.
Castle said the Interior Department is making no recommendations on what should be done with the assessment, saying it is provided only to show the potential of the resource available for future decisions that will be made elsewhere. The State Health Department is reporting a winter case of paralytic shellfish poisoning in the Ketchikan area. Spokesman Greg Wilkinson says a man reported symptoms of numbness after consuming about a dozen butter clams gathered at Refuge Cove State Park last weekend.
Woke up at 4:30 in the morning with tingling of the fingers, numbness around the mouth, which are symptoms consistent with paralytic shellfish poisoning. Fortunately, his symptoms did not progress beyond that.
PSP is a toxin that comes from certain plankton that shellfish consume. It can easily be fatal. The plankton are more prevalent in warmer waters, and last summer, health authorities saw the highest levels ever recorded in a sample of shellfish from the Ketchikan area. Wilkinson says this latest report underscores the department's advice against self-gathered shellfish from Alaska waters, regardless of the time of year.
We previously, up until just this year, had cases in every month of the year except, I think, November and December, and then we had cases in November and December of last year. So now we can say that we've actually had paralytic shellfish poisoning cases every month of the year. So There's no safe time. There's nothing that says, you know, months without an R in them or something like that, but there's no safe time to have, you know, self-harvested shellfish without a concern for paralytic shellfish poisoning.
Currently, the state only monitors commercial shellfish gathering sites for PSP. The lack of veterinary care in rural Alaska is a public health issue, but the solution isn't to lower standards for veterinarians. That was the message the House Labor and Commerce Committee heard earlier this week on House Bill 251. KNBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
Dr. Liz Hoffman of Oregon says she's a volunteer with the Christian Veterinary Association, which is willing to provide free animal care in rural Alaska. Here, she describes one village's concerns.
They stated they had had no veterinary services for 11 years, and their concerns were with the population of the animals. They were breeding, and they had too many dogs in the community. Rabies was also a concern, and they were also concerned about dog bites amongst the people in the town, and it was a fairly regular practice for the police to tell people they were going through the town at certain periods of time and shooting any dogs that were not tied up because of the risk of dog bites.
Hoffman says she surrendered her Alaska veterinary license when she left the state a few years ago, and it would cost about $900 to renew it. House Bill 251 co-sponsor Alan Dick, a Republican who represents almost 100 interior communities, says Alaska isn't making it easy for veterinarians licensed in other states or countries to provide free care to animals in Alaska.
It's been like J.C. Penney and Nordstrom's beating up on Salvation Army. You know, the folks in the bush aren't asking for first-class service. They're not asking for the ultimate of the elite. But they are, what the people in the bush are asking for is if we just could get, spay, neuter clinics.
Annette Kreitzer is chief of staff for Representative Dick. She says the bill would make it easier for veterinarians not licensed in Alaska to provide free care. She says the bill changes the grounds for complaints against them and the investigative process. It sets a 6-month time limit to file a formal complaint against visiting vets. It states a finding of incompetence cannot be based solely on unconventional or experimental practices that do no harm to the animal. Kreitzer says the restrictions are needed to keep veterinarians from submitting nuisance complaints against competitors.
The concern that Representative Dick has and our office has and the people that have contacted our office is to eliminate the ability for an economic complaint, a complaint that really is driven by the economics of the occupation of being a veterinarian in Alaska.
Dr. James Delker of Soldotna is past president of the Alaska Veterinary Medical Association. He says the bill diminishes protections for Alaskans.
First and foremost, it is our belief that the Board of Veterinary Examiners was formed to protect the citizens of Alaska, but House Bill 251 effectively strips the Veterinary Examining Board of any oversight or recourse, especially for those individuals who want to practice gratis medicine within the state. The bill also proposes to give equivalent rights and privileges to veterinarians from other countries where standards of training and the health care standards are far below what we would consider acceptable here.
Dr. Hayden Neville of Fairbanks says lowering the standards for veterinarians increases the public health risk.
For example, we want to know for sure that the rabies vaccines we use in our state are active. We want to ensure that drugs given to food animals are safe for us to eat.
Legislators asked about allowing visiting veterinarians to provide the most needed services, spay, neuter, and rabies shots. Dr. Bob Sept of the Bering Sea Animal Hospital in Chugiak says while those services may be routine, they do require skill.
I think everybody thinks that a spay and neuter is a simple procedure until the animal dies. And everybody thinks, oh, wow, because anesthetic is involved here. And I think you have to have competency and you have to have proper instrumentation and at least set up a reasonable facility when you go to these areas.
In other testimony, people suggested the state develop a process for issuing reasonably priced temporary licenses for vets who wish to practice in Alaska pro bono. The committee is holding the bill for further consideration. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Fur Rondi kicks off in Anchorage.
We already took a dog sled ride this morning, which was awesome. It was a lot of fun.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again has a better chance of regaining strength and energy between pregnancies. Her baby is more likely to be born on time and at a good weight. So talk to your healthcare provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies and ask for the state's free birth spacing booklet. Take the time to build a strong and healthy family. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The Senate Education Committee this morning approved a plan to reimburse local school districts for what they pay to transport students between home and school. Currently, transportation costs are paid by a state formula, but any cost overruns from that formula are paid from local sources, in some cases using money originally directed toward meeting classroom expenses. The Department of Education has included $64 million in next year's budget for transportation expenses. Committee co-chair Kevin Meyer says the goal is to cut costs by establishing criteria for expenses the state will cover.
The whole intent here is that over the next five-year period is to try to get all the school districts on the same schedule so that we could receive competitive bids for our pupil transportation statewide with the hopes of reducing costs, because obviously then you have a larger sample and you'll have more bids and hopefully have more competition.
Meyer says for the next 2 years, the state will continue the per pupil formula before basing the system on actual costs. At that point, he anticipates that the total cost for all school districts will be less than under the current plan. Deputy Education Commissioner Les Morris said the Parnell administration welcomes the chance to lower the cost of the program, although there is some concern about the controls that are built in. He told the committee that the department has tried various plans over the years.
This will be stepping back into that model that puts us involved with the districts on that bidding. We understand it. We also want to walk into it without guaranteeing things, because as you can see, history shows us we can't guarantee those things. But we are going to work to make sure that we put forward our efforts as this bill lays things out.
The bill now goes to the Finance Committee, where Moore says the department would like to discuss the administration's concerns about the possibility of the need for supplemental budget requests in the event of overruns. The 77th Fur Rendezvous kicked off today in Anchorage. One of the main events was the start of the Open World Champions Sled Dog Race. KSKA's Daisha Eaton was there and chatted with some of the people attending.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
24 teams took off under partly sunny skies from 4th Avenue and D Streets in downtown Anchorage Friday afternoon, right outside the Ferrandi headquarters. That's where people stepped inside for a break from the 20-some degree temperatures and where I asked them about their impressions of Ferrandi.
Keith Kirk, Vancouver Island, British Columbia. We already took a dog sled ride this morning, which was awesome. It was a lot of fun, but we're gonna check out all the other sights and sounds of Anchorage, and we're going to go over to the market and go see the ice sculptures and maybe go for a helicopter ride or something.
Madeline Manzano from Seattle, Washington. I think it's great. I've never seen a sled dog race before. So, I mean, everything is obviously interesting. It's just good to see the whole festival and the whole race. It's a great experience to be, you know, watching it, you know, right there, right in front of you.
Shaquan Rhodes from Eagle River. Well, it's kind of neat to see kind of the dogs taking off and stuff like that. I really like how everybody come out and kind of support it and stuff like that. I really haven't seen this because I'm from Virginia, so I'm not so used to it. But I'm coming back. I like it. I really like it. I'm coming back next year. Yes.
This weekend features the ice carving and snow sculpture competitions, the Rendi Grand Parade, the fur auction, and more. Fur Rendi runs through March 4th in Anchorage. I'm Daisha Eaton.
The snow carving competition got underway today. Judging is Sunday. To see a video of the snow sculpture artists at work, go to our website, alaskapublic.org. Coeur d'Alene Mines Corporation set new records for production, metal sales, and cash flow in 2011. The Idaho-based company, which owns the Kensington Mine near Juneau, released year-end financial results yesterday. Company-wide metal sales nearly doubled from 2010 to $1 billion. Gold production surpassed 220,000 ounces, an all-time high, and a 40% increase from 2010. Silver production also set a record at more than 19 million ounces. Coeur's profits from the Kensington mine were $49.5 million last year, its first full year in production. Metal sales from the Berners Bay mine totaled $151.2 million. Gold production at the mine more than doubled to 88,420 ounces. Production levels at Kensington have slowed since November to allow for an expansion of underground development activities. Chief Operating Officer Leon Hardy told a conference call for investors that Coeur is focused on long-term stability at the mine.
Through our accelerated development in the underground operations, we are opening up a new mining area in the lower region of the deposit to complement the mining from the upper region. We expect to have 4 to 6 working faces in each of the two regions to enhance our mining flexibility.
Hardy said new surface facilities at Kensington, including a new dormitory and kitchen, are now in use. An expanded warehouse and administrative offices are currently under construction. Coeur d'Alene Mines also has operations in Bolivia, Mexico, and Nevada. The company's stock price was up 18 cents on Thursday to $29.32 a share.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Rasmussen Foundation, accepting online nominations for the 2012 Distinguished Artist Award until March 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org. And by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD. Also, paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Josh Edge. This week on AK, the spirit of community. In Alaska, we know it's not always easy just to bring in help. If you want to fix something, you often have to do it yourself. This is especially true on an island where the nearest town is hours away by ferry. This past year in Sitka, on Baranoff Island in Southeast, inhabitants learned just how much they could accomplish as a community. Diana Saverin reports.
As do-it-yourself projects go, renovating the former Sheldon Jackson College is a massive one. The campus includes 20 buildings on 20 acres near downtown Sitka. And for 4 years after the college shut down, all of the buildings were falling into disrepair. Roger Schmidt runs the Sitka Fine Arts Camp.
The campus hits a nerve. I think that it's right downtown, and I think that most of us that live here, we think Sitka's gorgeous, but there's nothing gorgeous about full sheets of plywood covering every single window. We're not a community that's failing, and yet it just kept saying, you're failing, you're failing, you're failing.
The Sheldon Jackson trustees couldn't find a buyer for the building, so they eventually handed them over to the Sitka Fine Arts Camp. It was something Schmidt had been fighting for.
It felt victorious one minute and the next minute, you know, just pretty much the sort of feeling of when you step off the edge of something and you know you're completely committed and there isn't any way to stop the momentum. I mean, it was just like jumping into a really, really fast river. And so that was, you know, it was daunting. Everything about it's been daunting.
Hiring contractors to fix the buildings would have cost millions of dollars. Millions of dollars the Sitka Fine Arts Camp did not have. But they did have something else, something better than money.
Custom fitted. I'll make them 6 inches, crying out loud. 6 1/4.
How much time are you investing?
Probably for the last 5 months, it's been about 80 hours a week.
The Fine Arts Camp tapped a well of volunteer energy, deeper and richer than anyone really thought possible. That's Ted Loftenberg, a man who told me on the 5th of July that he was exuberant that the 4th was over and he could get back to work. He hates holidays. Ted and others worked so hard because they understood the need.
Shingles were falling off and moss is growing and the plants are wild, untrimmed. The grass wasn't being cut. These are all aspects of, why aren't we taking care of our community?
The job of revitalizing the campus suddenly supplied the previously deserted space with people. Schmidt said it was a great change to see.
It was like little elves were working all the time, night and day, because problems would just start disappearing. You know, you'd see something maybe in a bathroom, maybe you'd see something cracked or broken, and then you go in another day and it was magically gone.
Over 500 people logged over 20,000 volunteer hours to date. Wendy Alderson was the volunteer coordinator and took charge of the civilian army transforming the buildings.
And people were doing this in February. None of these old buildings had heat. And it was cold. It was so cold. And there were a group of people who would spend hours till they couldn't move their fingers anymore going through books. And I mean, it was kind of a obsessive thing, I think, for certain people. There wasn't any place to stop.
All that hard work paid off last June with the arrival of the first of over 500 students. They saturated the campus with an abundance of energy. The pounding of teenage drummers at all hours of the day gave the buildings a new heartbeat. Many in Sitka are camp alumni and credit it to this day for transforming their adolescent selves. Tracy Turner attended the Sitka Fine Arts Camp the first year it started. Her three children all attended, too. The first week of camp last year, she wandered through the refurbished buildings and marveled at the progress they had made.
I don't know if anything like this has ever happened anywhere. It's not just in Sitka or even in Alaska. I can't imagine. I mean, we're a community of 8,000 people. If you think about 14,000 volunteer hours in a, 4-month period? Where does that happen? Nowhere. This is unbelievable.
And the result? For a month in June, hundreds of middle and high schoolers get what they describe as a pretty magical summer. And for the rest of the year, well, Schmidt's imagination is still running wild, and the campus remains full of projects. Or as he puts it, he's just jumping into some really fast rivers and letting the current take him downstream. For AK, this is Diana Sabrin.
Now it's time for 300 Villages, AK's weekly trip around the state. This week's village is a magnet for artists, kayakers, photographers, and visitors to the state, not to mention fishermen. If you guessed Homer on the Kenai Peninsula, you're right.
Monty Davis, Executive Director of the Homer Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center, Homer, Alaska. Homer is unquestionably an artsy community. It is unquestionably quirky. It is a wonderful combination of Alaska village in that we still have a huge marine trades. Commercial fishing is a huge part of our economy, and yet because we're on the road system, because we're easily accessible, we do see a lot of visitors from Alaska and from the lower 48 and the rest of the world. The Homer Spit is the second longest spit in the world. The spit is a natural geologic phenomenon, I think is maybe the word. At least it is here. The wonderful part about the Homer Spit is that it's been there long enough and it's wide enough that we actually can have commerce on it. It is where our Homer Port and Harbor is located, which is really the economic engine of our community. There are, in the summertime, it is almost carnival-like, the atmosphere out there. There are tons of businesses from ice cream parlors, coffee shops, art galleries, individual artists selling their wares. The Homer Spit, the neatest part about it is it gets you so far out into the bay, it feels like you can almost reach across the bay to the beautiful mountains that are on the other side of it. We can see 4 glaciers from the spit itself, 5 actually along Kachemak Bay, so
It's unbelievably spectacular. Kachemak Bay, unbelievably beautiful Kachemak Bay. It takes my breath away literally on a daily basis, the amazing place that we get to live. One of the things that we're working on right now is a brand new Kachemak Bay water trail. And it will be a trail that starts on the spit, goes all the way up and around the end of Kachemak Bay and around to Seldovia, approximately 227 miles of marked water trail, so people can kayak any portion of it. They can take a motorboat on any portion of it, a sailboat. We're just trying to make all of these, this entire area accessible. So I personally like to think of Homer as the ecotourism capital of Alaska. There is so much more to do here than just fishing. We have amazing hiking, lots of marked trails throughout the town. The Wind Nature Center up on top of Diamond Ridge is absolutely spectacular. We have an amazing amount of groomed cross-country ski trails and absolutely, especially this year, amazing snow.
That was Monty Davis, director of Homer's Chamber of Commerce. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. We had help this week from Ellen Lockyer and Annie Fite. Tune into AK next week when we'll take a look at more unique stories of life in Alaska. I'm Josh Edge.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan, Jacqueline Estes and Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau, and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Josh Edge is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation celebrates four decades of dependable financing and competitive interest rates for Alaskans. Find out more by asking your lender or real estate professional how Alaska Housing can assist you with buying a home. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.